in each city. Not knowing where they'd end up, Pat and his associate decided to use the indexes to carve up the cities into different categories and come up with a recommendation for each category. At one end, they'd have a city with high marketing activity that was overperforming. Their recommendation for such a city would be to lower activity and see whether performance dropped. If performance remained fine, the company could spend less for the same results. If marketing activity was high and performance was low, they'd check the partner index to see whether we had enough partners in that city to justify increasing marketing activity there. It was late when they got down to the last category, cities with an activity index of zero, meaning no marketing at all. Overall, our average regional revenue for smaller companies was $2.90 per customer employee, but actual revenue per small company employee varied tremendously. In a large city such as Dallas, where we have a district office and do marketing programs, our average was $8.43. In a smaller city like San Antonio, where we have no office but do marketing programs, our revenue was $3.44 per employee. In the 80 cities with no office and no marketing, the zero activity index, our average revenue was 89 cents. Suddenly, they had their answer. New programs where we already did marketing would give us incremental results of some kind, but if new marketing programs brought even half of the 80 zero-activity cities up to just our regional average of $2.90, we would double our revenue in those cities from $30 million to $60 million in a year. Pat, who had never presented to Jeff before, had no way of knowing that he'd never cover his plan in a formal way. Jeff has a habit of flipping through presentations quickly to find the slides that describe action items. He can read faster than most people can talk, and skimming lets him get past the status aspect of a meeting and into the heart of the matter in a hurry. "We never got past slide one," Pat said. They dived right into the spreadsheets, answering Jeff's questions for 2 full hours. When Jeff saw the potential for the zero-activity cities, he said, "Go do this." Jeff made a final suggestion. Sift the 80 cities again with an eye to an 8-to-1 return on investment, the minimum ROI we think will justify a marketing program. Setting an 8-to-1 bar would enable them to weed out any cities where the percentage return might be high but the absolute dollar revenue would be too low. The 8-to-1 ratio represents our typical marketing spend as a percentage of net revenue. "Get this nailed and then tell me what you need," Jeff said. In a follow-up email, he added, "Don't let headcount and marketing budget get in the way. Just do it." A week later, Pat emailed Jeff with his final proposal to concentrate on 45 cities, later pared to 38. Ultimately, the marketing experiment was simple. 2 big day events in the year in each qualified city in which we hadn't been doing any marketing. Each big day would provide an overview of Microsoft strategy and our product line, and with our partners, we'd present various sales offers. With a third party to handle logistics, and with help from our partners for the big day events, the plan would entail just 2 new headcount and cost a total of just $1.5 million. The maximum ROI looked to be a staggering 20-to-1, a $30 million revenue increase on a $1.5 million investment. As the big day events were carried out, we used MS Sales to constantly measure our progress in the 38 cities against figures in similar markets to see if our new program was really making an impact. The results? After 3 quarters, we showed a 57% increase in revenue in those cities in which we did big day events versus 16% growth in a control group of 19 small cities that met the ROI requirement but sat out the test and invest period. Our partners in the 38 smaller cities, primarily value-added resellers and local retailers, were gratified by the big day program. Their sales increased an amount commensurate with ours, and the goodwill we achieved with them established a solid basis for future marketing cooperation. We've continued to build on these early efforts at identifying new market opportunities. We've expanded the marketing program to other regions and to other countries. We recognize the value of the numbers we originally collected for one-time use, so we now have them in the sales system and keep them up to date. Anybody working on any sales analysis can view the data and do historical comparisons. Also, while Pat Hayes' project was underway, another member of Jeff's group was working separately on an opportunity map for potential new business by different products. Jeff combined the work on products and Pat's work on the basis of revenue. Now we have a tool that allows anybody in the company to pivot through opportunities not just by revenue potential, but by product as well. Today, instead of scheduling a general Microsoft strategy tour in 8 cities where overall revenue is low, we can determine whether one city needs a seminar on Office, another a seminar on Windows, and a third a seminar on Exchange. From disco to shirt color, MS Sales informs. MS Sales, our worldwide sales information system, has been responsible for a great deal of learning that has improved our marketing. One of the most meaningful MS Sales reports is DISCO, for District Comparisons. Using DISCO, our Northeast District Manager discovered that the top districts overall in fiscal year 1996 were those that had done the best job of selling Microsoft Office to small business. She kicked off a direct mail campaign to resellers in the small business market that greatly increased district sales. By monitoring the results in MS Sales, she determined that the mailings needed to continue every 6 to 8 weeks in order to keep driving increased revenue. The Northeast District finished fiscal year 97 as the top growth district in this business sector, and the program has been emulated in other districts with similar results. Microsoft India used MS Sales to track the effectiveness of programs designed to encourage customers to buy CD-ROM versions of our products rather than the floppy disk versions. The change would save customers a lot of disk switching to install products and reduce our cost of goods. India also used MS Sales to determine which special promotions to resellers actually increased sales for particular products. In France, Microsoft's large account team analyzed which accounts had enough software to qualify for our highest volume discount program and went to those companies offering them great deals. In cases where customers had decentralized purchasing, we were able to tell them the locations of all of their PCs and help them better control their purchases. In Argentina, one of our salespeople was talking to a reseller who tried to impress him with somewhat inflated sales claims. Still on the phone with the reseller, our guy quickly checked MS Sales and found out exactly how much her company was selling, which was less than the reseller was claiming. When he casually mentioned the real sales numbers, she was surprised and asked how he had gotten the information so quickly. He described MS Sales to her and went through all the data he could get from it. "That's not all," he said. "It also knows you're wearing a red polo shirt." The phone went silent. "How does it know?" she finally asked. It was a lucky guess. Making an investment, not relying on luck. MS Sales, our sales database, was a major part of our marketing solution for smaller cities. MS Sales was the result of our commitment to build a financial reporting system that would capture a wide variety of sales information and put it at our fingertips. MS Sales enables us to drill into data in every way imaginable, by region, country, customer size, product area, salesperson, even postal codes. Every business needs information systems that can quickly provide this granularity of detail. It should be just a click of a button away for your sales managers or for your people in the field. It wasn't a matter of luck that we happened to have a crucial number like postal code revenue handy. We've made a real investment over a number of years in obtaining this kind of data and in getting our channel partners to feed sales data into our systems electronically. Because of our indirect sales model, integrating channel sales data digitally into our financial reporting is crucial. We didn't know beforehand all of the questions that would come up, but we had a pretty good idea of the kinds of data we'd need to answer a broad range of questions, at all levels of detail and from many perspectives. A paper-based system could not do this work. Similarly, any system without easy spreadsheet access to allow different theories to be tested would not have worked. The need to combine census data and collaborate across the country required immense flexibility. Because much of the sales data now comes to us via the Internet, in a format we can immediately use in MS Sales, the process is inexpensive, so our channel partners can afford it. By sharing the analysis from these tools appropriately with our partners, we also raised business discussions with them to a more strategic level. Really difficult business problems always have many aspects. Often a major decision depends on an impromptu search for one or two key pieces of auxiliary information and a quick, ad hoc analysis of several possible scenarios. You need tools that easily combine and recombine data from many sources. You need internet access for all kinds of research. Widely scattered people need to be able to collaborate and work the data in different ways. At one point, Steve Ballmer, company president, was critiquing plans for Pat Hayes' project by email from Europe. A back-end database was important to our solution, but more important was our decision to build our infrastructure around overall information flow. All of the important decisions were made in old-fashioned face-to-face meetings, but the program would not have been possible without the preparation enabled by our digital nervous system. Changing the role of district managers. At Microsoft, our information systems have also changed the role of our district sales managers. When MS Sales first came online, our Minneapolis general manager ran a variety of numbers for her district at a level of detail never possible before. She discovered that excellent sales among other customer segments were obscuring a poor showing among large customers in her district. In fact, the district was dead last among U.S. districts in that category. Finding that out was a shock, but also a big motivator for the large customer teams in the district. By the end of the year, Minneapolis was the top-growing district for sales to large customers. If you're a district manager at Microsoft today, you must be more than a good sales leader helping your team close the big deals, which has been the traditional district manager role. Now you can be a business thinker. You have numbers to help you run your business. Before, even if you were concerned about the retail store revenue in your area, you had no view whatsoever of those results. Now you can look at sales figures and evaluate where your business is strong, where your business is weak, and where your business has its greatest potential, product by product, relative to other districts. You can try out new programs and see their impact. You can talk to other managers about what they're doing to get strong results. Being a district sales manager in our organization is a much broader role than what it was 5 years ago because of the digital tools we've developed and their ease of use. Customer analysis identifies weaknesses. MS Sales also includes a central customer database, which we use to evaluate purchasing patterns of individual customers as well as groups of customers. Our Northern California district recently used MS Sales to analyze deployments for products such as Microsoft Exchange, Microsoft Office, and Windows. The team generated special reports with pivot tables to understand the number of licenses and the market penetration we were achieving among large customers in various customer segments. Manipulating the spreadsheets to look at national, regional, and district data, and to look at industries or specific accounts, Northern California realized that deployment of Microsoft Exchange, our messaging product, was weaker in certain types of accounts than in others. The district also found that in certain kinds of accounts, IBM's Lotus Notes tended to be the main competitor, while elsewhere, other products were the primary competitors. This precise information helped the district put together programs to ensure that Microsoft met the market challenge by sending our systems engineers and consultants to the right accounts. The information also helped Microsoft engineers and consultants show up better prepared, having gotten more training on the chief competitor in an account, so that they could answer tough questions about comparative strengths of our product versus the competitors. Doing business at the speed of thought. A digital nervous system gives its users an understanding and an ability to learn that would not be possible otherwise. A good flow of information and good analytical tools gave us insight into new revenue opportunities among volumes of potentially impenetrable data. It maximized the capabilities of human brains and minimized human labor. The Central Region team had only two core members who pulled in many others, and everyone was doing the work on top of his or her regular duties. The same infrastructure gave us the right tools for executing, evaluating, and fine-tuning our marketing program. To begin creating a digital nervous system, you should first develop an ideal picture of the information you need to run your business and to understand your markets and your competitors. Think hard about the facts that are actionable for your company. Develop a list of the questions to which the answers would change your actions. Then, demand that your information systems provide those answers. If your current system won't, you need to develop one that will. One or more of your competitors will. You know you have built an excellent digital nervous system when information flows through your organization as quickly and naturally as thought in a human being, and when you can use technology to marshal and coordinate teams of people as quickly as you can focus an individual on an issue. It's business at the speed of thought. Business lessons. Business people need to shake loose of the notion that information is hard to get. Better information can expand the role of sales managers from being the closers of big deals to being business managers. Bringing together the right information with the right people will dramatically improve a company's ability to develop and act on strategic business opportunities. Integrating sales data with partners not only streamlines reporting processes, but also raises the business discussions to a more strategic level. Diagnosing your digital nervous system. Is important data culled only for special one-time use, or can employees get access to it on a daily basis? Make a list of the most actionable questions about your business. Does your information system provide the data to answer them? Do your digital systems enable you to pinpoint sales areas that offer the most opportunities or that need the most attention? Chapter 3. Create a paperless office. It is sobering to reflect on the extent to which the structure of our business processes has been dictated by the limitations of the file folder. Michael Hammer and James Champy, Reengineering Your Business. Digital technology can transform your production processes and your business processes. It can also free workers from slow and inflexible paper processes. Replacing paper processes with digital processes liberates knowledge workers to do productive work. The all-digital workplace is usually called the paperless office, a phrase that goes back to at least 1973. It's a great vision. No more stacks of paper in which you can't find what you need. No more pawing through piles of books and reports to find marketing information or a sales number. No more misrouted forms, lost invoices, redundant entries, missing checks, or delays caused by incomplete paperwork. But the paperless office, like artificial intelligence, is one of those any-day-now phenomena that somehow never seem to actually arrive. The first use of the phrase paperless office appeared in a headline a quarter of a century ago in a trade publication for phone companies. The Xerox Corporation, although it never called it a paperless office, did more to promote the concept than anyone else. In 1974-75, the company was talking about the office of the future that would have computers and email with information online. Between 1975 and 1987, several business publications promised that the paperless office wasn't far off and would radically change the workplace. But in 1988, I told a reporter, "This vision of a paperless office is still very, very far away. Computers today are not yet fulfilling this vision." Today we have all the pieces in place to make the vision a reality. Graphical computing and better analytical tools make it easy to integrate data of various types. Highly capable networked PCs are ubiquitous in the office environment. The internet is connecting PCs around the world. Yet paper consumption has continued to double every 4 years, and 95% of all information in the United States remains on paper, compared with just 1% stored electronically. Paperwork is increasing faster than digital technology can eliminate it. In 1996, I decided to look into the ways that Microsoft, a big advocate of replacing paper with electronic forms, was still using paper. To my surprise, we had printed 350,000 paper copies of sales reports that year. I asked for a copy of every paper form we used. The thick binder that landed on my desk contained hundreds and hundreds of forms. At corporate headquarters, we had 114 forms in procurement alone. Our 401k retirement plan had 8 different paper forms for entering and exiting the plan, for changing employee information, and for changing employee investments or contributions. Every time the government changed the rules, we'd have to update and reprint the forms and recycle thousands of old ones. Paper consumption was only a symptom of a bigger problem, though. Administrative processes that were too complicated and time-intensive. I looked at this binder of forms and wondered, why do we have all of these forms? Everybody here has a PC. We're connected up. Why aren't we using electronic forms and email to streamline our processes and replace all this paper? Well, I exercised the privilege of my job and banned all unnecessary forms. In place of all that paper, systems grew up that were far more accurate and far easier to work with, and that empowered our people to do more interesting work. Starting a journey with a single click. Now, even before a new employee is hired, he or she embarks on an electronic journey. We receive 600 to 900 resumes from job applicants every day, by postal mail, by email, or via our resume builder on the Microsoft website. 70% of the resumes arrive electronically via email or the web, up from 6% 2 years ago and rising. Our software automatically acknowledges every electronic submission. Our recruiting database, from ResTrack of Lexington, Massachusetts, directly accepts information from resumes created at our resume builder website. Email submissions are parsed to deliver candidate information to ResTrack. A paper resume is scanned and converted into text that can go into the database. All resumes are electronically matched with open job positions within 24 to 48 hours of receipt. Human resources specialists search the ResTrack database for promising candidates, consulting with hiring managers in person or over email. They use scheduling software to set up job interviews. Every interviewer gets a copy of the resume and any other background information in email. After meeting with a prospect, each interviewer emails comments about the candidate to human resources, the hiring manager, and other interviewers, suggesting follow-up questions to later interviewers. This real-time sharing of interview information ensures that interviewers build on one another's work rather than duplicate it. One interviewer might suggest to the next that she probe for a better sense of how the person would work on a team, for example. For obvious hires, the email alerts help us focus our time on explaining to the recruits why Microsoft is a good choice for them. Let's say that an applicant named Sharon Holloway accepts our job offer. Sharon is a hypothetical new hire, but the description of her experience at Microsoft is typical of the experience of the 85 people we hire each week. While our intranet is a global solution for all 28,000-plus Microsoft employees worldwide, in this example, we'll assume that Sharon is based at our main campus in Redmond, Washington. Before Sharon arrives at Microsoft, an administrative assistant in her new group fills out the electronic new hire setup form on Microsoft's intranet to request a voicemail account, an email account, office furniture, and a computer with pre-installed software to be ready on Sharon's arrival. The same form ensures that Sharon gets added to the company phone list, receives a nameplate for her office door, and gets a mailbox in her building's mailroom. The single electronic form goes directly to the groups responsible for taking care of these items. Electronic logs ensure that everything is tracked. After an orientation session with a human resources manager on the company's general approach to business and employee issues, Sharon and the other new employees are directed to the company's internal website for most of their administrative needs. Sharon goes online to review the employee handbook. It no longer exists in paper form. Download any software she needs beyond the standard setup, and fill out her electronic W-4 form. Next, Sharon uses a procurement tool on our intranet called MS Market to order office supplies, books, a whiteboard, and business cards. MS Market automatically fills in her name, her email alias, the name of her approving manager, and other standard information for the order. Sharon has to enter only the information unique to the purchase into a few designated fields. The vendors receive her order electronically and deliver the order to her office. An order above a certain amount of money requires additional levels of management approval before processing. Our electronic system routes the form to the right people for an electronic okay. Sharon visits the Microsoft Archives, Library, and Company Newsletter sites to read up on Microsoft. By signing up for one or more of our library's new services, she sees the latest news about the company and the industry in electronic versions of publications such as The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, CNET, and so on. The availability of these services online has increased the number of our subscribing employees from 250 to 8,000 for the journal alone. The online library lists books, software, and videos that employees can check out online for delivery to their offices. Librarians also maintain web pages containing news and research for each Microsoft product group. New employees don't follow a standard route on our intranet site. We hire people who are intellectually curious, and they explore freely. After they get their basics set up, they'll dive into business or technical areas that relate to their jobs and interests. Our new employees use the site the way it's meant to be used, to learn and to get things done. When Sharon's first paycheck arrives, the payroll amount is deposited automatically into her checking account, and she can view her deposit confirmation and the details of her pay stub on a secure intranet page. As her banking needs change, Sharon can change her financial institutions online. For travel, Sharon handles plane and hotel reservations online with a booking tool designed by Microsoft in a partnership with American Express. AXI, available online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, gives Sharon direct access to corporate negotiated airline fares and flight availability information, a low-fare search tool, airline seat maps, corporate preferred hotels, and the ability to check a flight status or request an upgrade. Microsoft's travel policies are embedded in the AXI software as business rules. Any non-standard travel request triggers email from AXI to a manager for review. Travel expenses are submitted digitally to her manager for electronic approval. We deposit the reimbursement into Sharon's checking account electronically within 3 business days of approval. Supporting changing lifestyles. Contrary to popular perception, Microsofties do have a life outside the company. Sharon gets married, and after her honeymoon, enters her vacation time online. When she and her husband move into a new house, Sharon submits her new address via an online form that automatically distributes the information to all of the organizations that need her address, such as payroll, benefits, and the vendors managing our retirement and employee stock option programs. She visits our intranet to get information about bus routes and ride sharing in her new neighborhood. When Sharon and her husband have a baby, she goes online to learn about benefits such as parenting seminars, paid parental leave, and daycare referrals. Sharon electronically submits the medical claims associated with the birth and goes online to change her benefits to accommodate the new baby. Microsoft has a cafeteria-style benefits program that pays a certain dollar amount of benefits to each employee. An employee can model different what-if scenarios to decide how the dollars should be allocated, with choices for medical, dental, and optical coverage, life and disability insurance, health club membership, and legal services, and see how an increase or a decrease in one benefit affects the entire package. She can set up a payroll deduction for any benefit combination that costs more than the company contribution. An online tool is also the means for Sharon to manage her 401k retirement plan, her employee stock purchases, and her stock option grants. She can direct the total percentage of her salary to be withheld for retirement or stock purchases, and can alter the percentage to be allocated to each retirement investment option. Fidelity Investments' website for the plan enables Sharon to view current account information and market indexes, to model loans, and to review her transaction history. The stock purchase tool enables Sharon to view the number and price of shares she's purchased, change her withholding amount during enrollment periods, or cancel participation. The stock option tool enables her to accept a grant with a secure electronic signature and view her options summary and exercise history. Solomon Smith Barney, the brokerage firm that handles Microsoft stock options, is creating a website that will enable Sharon to run scenarios to see how many shares she needs to exercise for such things as remodeling her house for her growing family. All employees can exercise their stock options online, unless they live in countries that require paper forms. As an employee and a shareholder, Sharon receives the company's annual report online. Our income statement is shown according to the conventions and in the currencies of 7 different countries, and my letter to shareholders is available in 10 languages. And she can vote her proxy online. Microsoft was the first company to offer paperless proxy voting to employee shareholders, a step that has increased our employee participation from 15% to more than 60%. Giving campaign led to first electronic form. Our first electronic form at Microsoft was for our giving campaign to support United Way of America, a nonprofit organization committed to addressing health and human services needs. We wanted to make it painless for people to sign up to make charitable contributions. Some users just want to quickly click on a button to give their fair share. Other people want to drill down to see a list of eligible nonprofit agencies that they can give to through the campaign. Some employees want to designate their contributions to go to certain institutions or to certain fields, such as education or cancer research. Others want to get information about volunteering in their communities or learning about philanthropic opportunities through United Way or other agencies. Our giving application makes it easy for both the person who wants to spend a few seconds and the person who might want to spend an hour browsing around at different charitable agencies before deciding what to do. And it offers simple choices, such as giving through payroll deductions, in cash, or in stock donations. Our efforts to support United Way taught us a lot about how to design a form that was easy to deliver over a network and easy to use. That learning has paid off in every other intranet application we've come up with since. and the giving application raised 20% more money than the previous paper system. Using one tool for multiple planning needs. One of Sharon's jobs as a marketer is product planning. Most of the management and financial information she needs is accessible from MS Reports, a single interface to many databases, such as expense, customer, contract, and budget. MS Reports can also be used to access MS Sales, our sales reporting system, Head Tracks, our headcount system, and a financial management system that includes general ledger, fixed asset, project accounting, and statutory information and management reports. MS Reports uses Excel pivot tables to show data from multiple views, enabling Sharon to focus on analysis instead of data structures. She can review revenue projections for her product from sales locations worldwide as the projections are updated. She can view historical information about previous marketing campaigns, such as personnel, capital expenses, and marketing expenses. With the relevant data from MS Reports to help her plan, Sharon uses an online budgeting application to enter her projected headcount and expenses for her new product, then is able to track her marketing budget throughout the project, answering questions such as, what is my spend rate, where am I spending money, and how can I reallocate resources for new projects? Sharon may use an additional planning tool, OnTarget, to track expenses in more detail. OnTarget provides project accounting. A manager can get complete project expenses across multiple cost centers or across fiscal years. Rewarding staff while following policy. When Sharon is promoted to manager, one new duty is conducting performance reviews for each of her reports every 6 months. Each employee writes a self-evaluation, and Sharon adds her own performance evaluation to the original document. Sharon's evaluation of an employee incorporates peer review, and email makes it easy to get feedback from people in other divisions or even around the world. Sharon and her manager review her appraisals of the work of her employees and her proposed ratings for them. Then Sharon meets each employee face-to-face to discuss performance and new objectives. Microsoft managers used to spend more time on the paperwork for reviews than on the reviews themselves. Our review application simplifies the work of managers while ensuring that they follow company policies. The application calculates a default merit increase and bonus for each person based on Sharon's rating and on the employee's job level and current salary. Overriding the defaults is possible, for example, to load up the salary and bonus for a star performer, but managers have to adhere to the company's overall percentage guidelines. As Sharon enters the numbers for each employee, the tool automatically calculates the new group average. If she comes in too low or too high, she can go back and redo the numbers. After senior managers review the numbers electronically, compensation changes feed directly into the master employee data and stock option systems. By translating a rating into compensation, and by enabling the manager to visually compare such figures as ranking by performance and by salary, the review application helps managers to grade employees consistently, according to both performance and policy. We estimate that the application also reduces managers' time spent on review administration by at least 50%. Saving aggravation and $40 million. Using our intranet to replace paper forms has produced striking results for us. As this book goes to press, we have reduced the number of paper forms from more than 1,000 to a company-wide total of 60 forms. Among those groups that started out with the most forms, procurement has dropped from 114 to 1. Operations has reduced the number of its forms to only 6, and human resources is down to 39. Of the 60 remaining paper forms, 10 are required by law, and 40 are required by outside parties because their systems are still based on paper. The last 10 paper forms are used so seldom that we haven't bothered to make them electronic yet. Businesses have an incentive to persuade partners and governments to accept information electronically so that everybody can get to a fully digital approach with no paper. Overall, the savings from our using the electronic forms I've described in this chapter amounted to at least $40 million in our first 12 months of use in 1997 to 98. The biggest savings came from the reduction in processing costs. Accounting firms put the cost of paper orders, mostly the time of all the people handling the paper, at about $145 per transaction. Electronic processing at Microsoft, by comparison, runs less than $5 per transaction. In its first year, MS Market alone handled 250,000 transactions, involving more than $1.6 billion, saving our company at least $35 million in processing. Transaction volumes are increasing significantly. The $35 million figure includes $3 million saved through the reassignment of 22 procurement personnel worldwide. MS Market also directs employees to vendors with whom we've negotiated volume discounts, which saves us money on many purchases. Using electronic forms for just the 401k plan, the employee stock purchase plan, and the stock options plan saved us another $1 million annually in labor. Attrition took care of some of the reduction in headcount, but most of the staff moved on to more important tasks they weren't doing before because they'd had to spend so much time on rote administrative chores. One person who had been spending each day answering routine questions now manages the content for the web page that provides the answers. Within a year, the number of employees using the online system to obtain account information and ask questions regarding Microsoft's 401k plan doubled from 24% to 51%. As a result, during the same period, assistance by service representatives decreased by half, from 35% to 17%. Our new online travel system is expected to reduce overhead in our corporate travel group and to triple travel agent productivity from an average of 8 to 25 completed itineraries, usually hotel, rental car, and airfare, per agent per day. Consistent employee use of preferred vendors will save us millions of dollars per year. The average time it takes an employee to make a domestic travel reservation is projected to go from 17 minutes and 6 phone calls or emails to approximately 5 minutes. All of the administrative applications and content I've talked about in this chapter run on a total of 12 servers, either dual processor or quad processor systems. Total cost for the hardware was about $300,000. Total development cost across 2 years was about $8 million. Ongoing support runs about $765,000 annually. Though far lower than comparable costs on other systems, our expenses were still higher than companies will see today because we pioneered a lot of solutions. There were no standards, for instance, for integrating third-party systems inexpensively. Software products such as our commerce server provide this integration today. Companies will see lower costs going forward as the result of standards and of increased functionality in commercial software packages. Even as we pioneered solutions, our central IT budget, which covers these and other major business applications, decreased 3% between 1996 and 1999, mostly from standardizing data and consolidating the number of information systems we have. Putting responsibility into the hands of those affected. Electronic tools give us benefits beyond reducing transaction costs. For example, by requiring proper sign-off before a request is processed, MS Market prevents inappropriate purchases that can easily slip through a paper-based system. Shipping information is typed instead of handwritten, so routing errors are almost non-existent. Communication with our suppliers is documented, and we know the costs in advance so that there are no surprises. Our suppliers get paid faster, too, which motivates them to make swift deliveries. Business rules are implemented up front so that, for example, the system won't accept an order that has an incorrect budget code. This requirement eliminates hours and hours our finance group used to spend scrubbing records. Employee buying patterns can be tracked and used in vendor negotiations, too. The list of benefits goes on. We're always discovering new ones. In our human resources, procurement, and employee services groups, and in the functions they touch throughout Microsoft, going digital has given us a mechanism for changing how we work. By enabling our employees to directly control such processes as entering address changes and making and changing retirement investments, we've put responsibility directly into the hands of the people most motivated to act. Self-service administration of benefits enables human resources staff to spend more of their energy on strategic personnel issues, such as recruitment and training. This fundamental process issue, how to get bureaucracy out of the way, is one that our human resources staff itself is driving. Human resources has conducted a number of classic re-engineering studies to understand what routine processes can be automated and what processes require their professional skills. Human resources wants to do thinking work, not manual work. opposing inflexibility, not paper. With my insistence on eliminating paperwork, I must sound anti-paper. I am against paper forms, but even I still print out long electronic documents I want to read and annotate. Most people, when they're trying to organize a long document, like to spread out the pages on a table so that they can see them all at once. Hard to do with a PC. Until we get a breakthrough in flat-screen technology, and furious research is going on at Xerox, the MIT Media Lab, Kent State, Microsoft, and other academic and corporate research sites in the United States and Japan. Books and magazines still can't be beat for readability and portability. High-quality displays are a necessity in the information-rich future. Microsoft showed, in late 1998, a technology codenamed ClearType that allows color LCD screens to display text dramatically better than before. Combining this with improved hardware will be revolutionary. Some future screens will be flexible, so that you can roll up or fold a display and take it with you, like a newspaper. Other screens will have the computer circuitry embedded in them, so that an entire PC could be as thin as the display part of a current laptop. One new technology enables a screen to retain its image after power is removed. Imagine true digital ink, where you can make a picture and hang the display on your wall. Today, PCs are better than paper for reading when you have shorter documents and lots of collaboration, or when you're searching and pivoting through data. Easy searches and hypertext links are the major reason electronic encyclopedias have overtaken print encyclopedias in popularity. For forms, when you're filling in data that eventually has to be entered into a computer anyway, the time is ripe for abolishing paper. Otherwise, you end up with groups whose job is to take paper forms and type the information into the computer system. Then you get people who measure their productivity by noting how great it is that their data entry error rate has gone down from 3% to 2%. If you start with electronic forms, you not only eliminate extra work, you also ensure consistency, easy measurement, and proper authorization. When a paper form is confusing, you end up calling somebody or going somewhere to stand in line. On our intranet, every page contains summaries and details of plans, the ability to search, and links to related pages and to answers to frequently asked questions, or facts. A well-thought-out fact feature on a new intranet application can save us 200 or more emails from employees looking for basic information. If you do find anything on an electronic form confusing, or if you think one of the fields should be filled in automatically for you, you can click the Email To line and type in a few words saying, "Hey, this should work better." Employee feedback has resulted in hundreds of improvements, small and large, to our intranet forms. And it doesn't take a year to get these changes made, which might be the case with paper forms. With a web-based form, in most instances, a change is made within anywhere from a few days to a few months. Since you have no control over the paper that reaches you from outside your organization, your strategy should be to integrate it into your electronic systems. Companies such as Eastman Software and Platinum Software use imaging software to scan documents and integrate them into the digital flow. You can drill down through various levels of detail and cost summaries, all the way to an image of the original paper invoice, and you can index and search for original paper documents and include them in email-based workflow scenarios. While not as good as having data come in digitally, scanning enables you to go all digital internally while waiting for the rest of the world to catch up. Getting feedback the old-fashioned way. Though most of the comments on our intranet applications come electronically, we occasionally also get face-to-face feedback from users. After a few months of use, our MS Market team had resolved most of the issues that employees had raised about use of the procurement tool. Only one senior executive stood between the MS Market team and 100% adoption, President Steve Ballmer, a guy who exudes exuberance. The product manager for MS Market, Linda Criddle, resolved to meet with Steve personally to find out what would make him an MS Market user. She talked her way onto the calendar for Steve, whom she had never met. As she turned the corner to the hallway by his office, Linda says, she could see a couple of framed magazine articles in a glass case. One from Upside magazine showed Steve with a beatific smile and called him the Microsoft Apostle. The other, from Forbes, showed Steve in a sterner pose and described him as the George S. Patton of software. Linda, hearing Steve's voice through the thin conference room wall, quickly understood that he was meeting with the office product group. His theme was that they need to listen to customers more and need to find out what customers really wanted, to learn precisely how they used our software every day. At each emphasized word, he'd bang on the wall. Few meetings with Steve are complete without sound effects. Linda knew most of the executives in the meeting from a previous job, and when the attendees filed out of the meeting, she asked, "Did you tire him out or rile him up?" One said, "I think we may have riled him up," which got everybody laughing. Linda trailed Steve into his office, trying to introduce herself. Steve was distracted with a bunch of things to do before he had to leave for the day. "So what can I do for you?" he asked. "Actually, I'm hoping to give you the same kind of grief you just gave the office guys," she said. This got Steve's attention. "I know you don't use MS Market," Linda said. "That doesn't help me. Tell me what you need to make it work." When Steve saw that she wasn't there to justify the tool's imperfections, and that she intended to fix any problems, he stopped to concentrate on what frustrated him about MS Market. "I don't want to get a $10 million order request and not know whether other managers have reviewed it before me," he said. MS Market needed to provide the ability to route orders through the management hierarchy. "And I want to see all of the supporting documentation that accompanies a purchase order, and I need to be able to approve orders offline." Linda got the information she needed in less than 10 minutes. The routing feature was already under development, so Steve's first requirement for MS Market was implemented within 2 weeks. Access to supporting documentation was added 3 months later. The final feature, offline support, is in the queue for a future release. This little tale illustrates several points about Microsoft's approach to digital information. Electronic applications have to solve the problems of our business people, and we don't stop until they do. And everybody uses our electronic tools, starting with me. Steve could give Linda precise feedback because he'd made honest efforts to use the tool. From sales analysis to restaurant bills. I use our Microsoft intranet for analyzing sales numbers. I do this before major business reviews and before a trip to one of our subsidiaries. I spend 3 or 4 weeks a year outside the United States on business. I go through the numbers thoroughly to uncover any issues I should take up with the business managers. It takes me only 20 minutes to understand how a country is doing compared to budget, to last year's results, and to other countries. I drill down on the areas significantly above or below my expectations, so I am ready to discuss the numbers when I arrive. I'll also review presentations by other Microsoft speakers while I'm preparing a talk for a major industry event. I use our multimedia streaming product to listen over the corporate network if I miss an important meeting we've taped. I don't sit in on quarterly earnings calls to financial analysis, for instance, but when I'm home at night reading, I might put on the audio and listen in. These tools keep me in close touch with what's going on in our company. I work out major headcount changes or reorganizations in meetings with senior managers, and then Human Resources routes a form to me for approval. It's a good check to be sure there's a crisp understanding of what we decided to do. The old paper personnel form was a killer. It was used for so many things that it was confusing. As the CEO, I'm supposed to be making decisions involving tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, but organizationally, I am the only one who can approve the restaurant bill for Steve Ballmer, our president. I thought every company had this kind of explicit review for expense approval. I learned I was wrong when I demonstrated our intranet to a group of CEOs. Paul O'Neill of Alcoa, which is the world's leading producer of aluminum, came up to me after my talk and asked, "It's great that everything is digital and efficient, but why should you have to review expense reports? You've got better things to do with your time." Paul got rid of explicit expense approvals at Alcoa 10 years ago. Alcoa has clear rules about what are authorized expenses and what are not. The company audits expense reports from time to time on a sampling basis. "We trust our employees as a matter of employment," Paul said. "If we find that you're not trustworthy, you're gone. We don't have any problems." Paul suggested that we could take the same approach, creating a new policy to simplify things and using our digital system to carry out the policy. Paul's right. We're shifting from one-by-one approvals to a monthly email summary combined with a special email alert when there are unusual expenses. The emails will allow us to drill in on individual expense reports or a complete history if we choose to. Paul's comment is already saving me time. keeping your priorities straight. While the move from paper to electronic forms is a vital step in the evolution of a modern organization's nervous system, you should use the change to improve important processes central to your business, rather than just streamline what you have. Once in place, a digital nervous system is easy to build on. A good network, a good email system, and easy-to-build web pages are everything you need for eliminating internal paper forms, too. You can add any number of internet applications easily once this infrastructure is in place. Our internal tools have two goals: to use software to handle routine tasks, eliminating wasted time and energy for our knowledge workers, and to free people to do more difficult work and handle exceptions. Our internal developers use the soft-boiled egg rule. A user must be able to get into and out of an administrative tool within 3 minutes. The metric ensures that we don't automate a process with a clumsy tool. Streamlining administrative and internal business processes is an important way to improve the overall efficiency of your employees. Giving knowledge workers good internal tools also sends them a subtle but important message. Companies talk about rewarding initiative and keeping workers focused on business. When employees see a company eliminate bottlenecks and time-draining routine administrative chores from their workdays, they know that the company values their time and wants them to use it profitably. It's easy to measure when you make your factory workers more efficient. It's hard to measure when you make your knowledge workers more effective. But it's just common sense that knowledge workers who are not distracted or burdened by routine matters will do better work. The benefit to customers is that your employees spend less time shuffling papers and more time on customer needs. I know one thing for sure. You couldn't make Microsoft employees go back to the old way of doing things. The predictions that we'd have paperless offices were right, just premature by several decades. Business lessons. Digital information enables process breakthroughs that are impossible with paper systems. Tally all your paper forms, starting with forms-intensive areas such as procurement and human resources. Develop programs to replace them with digital forms. A self-service approach can handle 90% of employee administrative needs. Diagnosing your digital nervous system. Do you have electronic forms for your major internal business applications? Do you have people moving information around, or do your computers handle routine process flow while people handle exceptions and value-added issues? As you add applications, do you get more synergy or more complexity? Part 2. Commerce. The Internet Changes Everything. Chapter 4. Ride the Inflection Rocket. The moment man first picked up a stone or a branch to use as a tool, he altered irrevocably the balance between him and his environment. While the number of these tools remained small, their effect took a long time to spread and to cause change. But as they increased, so did their effects. The more the tools, the faster the rate of change. James Burke, Connections. Not too long ago, I had a talk scheduled with the board of directors of a German financial institution. These were experienced business people. The youngest person there was probably 55, and many of them were in their 60s. They'd seen a lot of changes in banking, and beginning with mainframes, they'd lived through a lot of technology changes, too. The bank had not yet, though, embraced the new internet technologies. On the day of my talk, they'd heard a series of presentations from Microsoft employees about our strategy. When I walked into the briefing center, they were all sitting there with their arms folded across their chests, looking unhappy. "Okay," I said, "what's the problem?" One of them replied, "We think that banking is in the process of changing completely, and we're getting technical presentations from people here at Microsoft, more technical than we're used to." He took off his glasses and rubbed his eyes and said, "This is probably good, although it's making us tired." After a pause, he continued, "It's good that you're just going to make all of your products better, but what is the overall plan? To view you as a long-term vendor, we need you to give us a vision of the future. What are your organizing principles for development?" The senior Microsoft executive who concludes a customer briefing doesn't normally bring a prepared presentation. Instead, the person answers questions and summarizes what we'll do to address any important issues that have come up. So as I stood in front of the German bankers, I was thinking, oh boy, we've spent 8 hours talking to this bank, and we haven't answered the customer's central concerns. Now I've got to do it off the top of my head. But by that time, I'd given my talk on the digital nervous system a couple of dozen times, and I'd been working on this book for almost a year. I went to the whiteboard and began to go down the major changes that I thought were going to occur with technology in the near future. What I'm about to write down are 10 inflection points that I think will fundamentally alter all industries, I told the bankers. My friend Andy Grove had written about different inflection points that changed various industries at different times. Here I was using inflection points to mean 10 significant shifts in customer behavior that were all related to digital technology and were all happening now. I'm going to ask you whether you believe each of them will happen. Never mind for now how quickly, just tell me whether you believe they're ever going to occur. If you don't believe they will, then you shouldn't change what you're doing with technology. But if you believe they're going to happen, and it's only a matter of time, then you should start to prepare for that change today. Do you believe that in the future, people at work will use computers every day for most of their jobs? I asked. Today, a lot of people use computers occasionally, but many knowledge workers may use their PCs only a few times a day. They may even go a couple of days without using PCs. Do you believe that today's paperwork will be replaced by more efficient digital administrative processes? They did. Their only concern was how to make the transition from a paper to a digital world. Do you believe that one day most households will have computers? I asked. In the United States today, about half the households have PCs. The percentage is a bit higher in some countries, but much lower in most others. Do you, I asked, believe that one day computers will be as common in homes as telephones or TVs? They did. Do you believe that one day most businesses and most households will have high-speed connections to the World Wide Web? I asked. They nodded agreement. Do you believe email will become as common a method of communication among people in business and homes as the telephone or paper mail is today? Currently, not everybody uses email, even if they have a computer. Would that situation change? They agreed that it would. Now, if most people have computers and use them every day, I asked, do you believe that most information will start arriving in digital form? Do you think your consumer bills will arrive electronically? Do you think you'll be booking your travel arrangements over the Internet? They agreed that these changes were on their way. Do you think digital appliances will become common? I asked. Do you believe that digital devices for photography, video, TV, and phones will become ubiquitous? Do you expect that other new digital devices will proliferate around the home and be connected to the web? It was only a matter of time, they agreed. Do you foresee a time, I asked, when notebook computers become computer notebooks? I described what I meant. A computer notebook being a new device that enables you to take notes as you do today with a notepad and lets you carry with you all the personal and professional data you need. It's another aspect of having all information be digital. This will probably be the last inflection point to occur. The great thing about a computer notebook, I said, is that no matter how much you stuff into it, it doesn't get bigger or heavier. They laughed. There was a 30-second conversation in German before one of them said, "We thought you said something funny, and then we realized you said something profound." "Am I wasting your time?" I asked. "Do you believe these changes are ever going to happen?" By now we were beginning to have a dialogue. They had a short conversation among themselves in German. The banker who had spoken before said, "We hired a management consultant, and we've been going through the same discussion at home. And yes, we believe it's going to happen. When it does, it's going to completely change the nature of banking." "When is it going to happen?" I asked. "What do you think?" They had a longer and more animated discussion in German. They came back and said, "We didn't expect to make this decision here, but we have. First, we were going to tell you 20 years, but then we decided that inside of 10 years, these inflection points will either have arrived or be very imminent. Banking will be a completely different thing." To prepare for that change, I told them, you need to make digital information flow pervasive in your organization. I talked briefly about needing to take advantage of existing digital tools they already have for their knowledge workers, about digitally linking their knowledge systems with business operations systems, and ultimately creating a new infrastructure around the PC and Internet technologies. If you do these things, I told them, you'll be prepared for the three fundamental business shifts that will occur as the result of all the digital inflection points. 1. Most transactions between business and consumers, business and business, and consumers and government will become self-service digital transactions. Intermediaries will evolve to add value or perish. 2. Customer service will become the primary value-added function in every business. Human involvement in service will shift from routine, low-value tasks to a high-value personal consultancy on important issues, problems, or desires for the customer. 3. The pace of transactions and the need for more personalized attention to customers will drive companies to adopt digital processes internally if they have not yet adopted them for efficiency reasons. Companies will use a digital nervous system to regularly transform their internal business processes to adapt to an environment that constantly changes because of customer needs and competition. Complex customer service and business problems will require powerful computers on both sides of the relationship, customer and employee. The new relationship will be augmented by various electronic means, such as voice, video, interactive use of the same computer screen, and so on. We'll see a world in which fairly simple personal companion devices proliferate side by side with incredibly powerful general-purpose PCs that support knowledge work at home or the office. Life's going to be pretty exciting as these changes come about, I concluded, and within a decade, it's likely that most of them will occur. This world will be radically different from the one we live in today. Microsoft's vision, I said, was to provide software that linked all these digital devices together and enabled people to create digital solutions based on the web lifestyle. It was that simple. The German Bank Board had a final question for me, which is the question on everyone's mind. What should they do personally to get ready for this new digital world? I left them with these thoughts. Practice hands-on usage. Senior executives should use email and other electronic tools to get familiar with the new way of doing things. They should see what their competitors' internet sites look like. They should become internet users and consumers. Buy some books and arrange some travel over the internet, I told them, and see what it's like. As of late 1998, CEOs are beginning to explore this new medium. About 50% of the readership of Chief Executive Magazine use the internet